Welcome to Next Us 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I am your host, Doc JC. The inaugural season of Next Us 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-African-American, all-female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September 7, 2022, to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. I'm pleased to welcome to Episode 10, the descendant of Sylvia Masters Armstrong Benton, who served in the 6888. My guest tonight is Dennis Miller, grandson of Sylvia Masters Armstrong Benton. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you for having me, Doc. I really appreciate you giving me a platform to speak about my grandmother, because she is a titan among mere mortals in my life. So thank you for having me.
Well, I'm honored that you're spending the time with us tonight. I'd like to start with a few interesting facts. First, eight of Sylvia's sons and grandsons have served in the military. And second, when Sylvia returned from service, she became an entrepreneur. Those are very intriguing facts, and we're going to talk some more about them. But first, tell me about Sylvia. Let's go back to the beginning. So she was born in Jacksonville, Florida, and grew up in Savannah, Georgia, where she enlisted. How was she when she enlisted?
She was 22 years old.
Okay. And what was she doing at the time of enlistment?
She was working with her mother. Her mother cleaned houses. She was a, you know, maid and house servant. She went along with her and helped her with everything that she needed to do. My grandmother was a seamstress. She did hair. She was a jack of all trades and a master of all of them.
Okay. What did she tell you about why she decided to enlist?
She talked to me about her options being limited in her environment. She didn't know what she was going to be able to do as pertaining to education or career or any of those things. And when the war started, or the dust up started to get serious, she thought to herself, well, this is an opportunity for me to one, get out of the situation that I'm in here in Georgia, two, to see the world, three, to be around people who I'd never been around before. So all of those opportunities were enticing to her. So she followed them, and she turned into something that I have tried to grow up to be like my whole life.
The story that you tell about why she enlisted is what I've heard from so many other descendants as well, because the opportunities were so limited for our people and certainly Black women at that time.
And also she thought to herself, if I'm going to raise a family, if I'm going to move forward in my life, I need to set a strong foundation for them. And I know that going into the service is something that I'll be able to build upon as I move forward. So she was also forward thinking as well as thinking about the moment.
Absolutely. How did her parents react when she decided to enlist? Not everybody's happy about the daughters enlisting. They weren't happy about their sons either, because they're worried about them getting wounded or killed. But I think a lot of times people are really hesitant about daughters enlisting.
My grandmother was the most pragmatic person I've ever met. And evidently her mother and father were also that same way. So when she talked to them about enlisting and her reasons why, they understood and were supportive of her, because they saw that she was doing it not because she was following some romantic involvement or didn't really know what she was getting herself into. They saw that it was well thought out. It was well, she was setting herself up for success. So they were in her corner from day one.
Yet it was still a pretty courageous thing for a young black woman to enlist in the army in the 40s. There was a lot going on, a lot of reasons to be fearful. What do you think made her special?
She was not fearful. My grandmother was not a big person. She's 5'1", pretty little smile. She was just the nicest little old lady you ever met. But she had a knife in her boot. She was serious about everything she did, and she never approached anything with fear. I never saw her once approach anything feeling uncertain or fearful or without confidence. She walked through life with her head up, her shoulders back, and she walked into the service like, I'm gonna come here and succeed, and whether you like it or not.
And I'm sure that propensity of hers was very helpful for her when she
Yes,
became an
ma'am.
entre when she came back and became an entrepreneur. I'm interested in any stories that she shared with you about her time in the service, any adventures or painful or scary or funny memories.
It's funny, I tell the story a lot. When I was a young man, I didn't know much about her service. She didn't talk about it a whole lot. She was proud of it. She was very involved in her WAC engagements. She did a whole lot of things that were veteran oriented, but she didn't really speak to me much about it. However, when I decided to enlist and I got home from boot camp, we began to have more and more conversation about what she did while she was in. She was my grandmother, and she loved me, and she treated me like her baby boy. But at the same time, I wasn't in her cohort of the military background. And once I became so, she then had conversation with me about the service, just the same way as a lot of veterans do. If you have served before, if you've been to combat, all of those things, you can have a conversation with folks in a way that you couldn't if you didn't share that same background with them. So one of the things that she talked to me about, she when I went on my first deployment, I was on a Navy vessel, and we sailed from the coast of we left from Norfolk, Virginia, and we sailed over to Spain. And during that trip, it was, rough sledding, and there was a whole lot of weather, and the boat was ripping and rolling and rocking. And I told her about this, and then she gave me the one up of talking about when she was on the boat going over to England, and the Germans were firing upon her boat. So she told me, at least, you had to deal with the weather, but at least nobody was shooting at you.
Right. So, what did she do when she completed her service in the military?
When she completed her service, she came back to Savannah, Georgia, and all of her sisters and brothers were moving up north. Some of them landed in Virginia, some in Detroit, I believe. So she came up to Philadelphia. She moved to Philadelphia. She started her family with a young gentleman who she had met while she was serving in World War II. Excuse me. They got married and settled down in Philadelphia. And she bought into a franchise of laundromats. And she ran that laundromat on Point Breeze Avenue, right around the corner from our house, for all of the time I knew her to work.
So was she able to take advantage of the GI Bill? And if so, how did she use it? Was that part of what she used to help her with her business?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
She was able to business, she was able to help purchase her home. She used the GI Bill. Again, she was very aware of the benefits after service that a member would be able to tap into, and she did so to do those things.
And that's good to hear because I've heard from some other families where the soldier was not able to access the benefits or they were rejected. And then there are others like my mom, she made sure that she utilized, got access to and utilized her benefits. So I'm happy to see that your grandmother did as well.
I never knew her to take no for an answer. When she went to whomever it was that were holding on to what she was supposed to have, they let go at some point.
You have to make the system work for you because it will not automatically work for you.
Ma'am.
So do you recall any lessons that she shared through her service that she passed on to the family? Any family values and traditions that she passed on as a consequence of her service?
She ran our household as if she was the platoon commander and we were her troops. I have a picture of me. I was about 3 years old, and I'm on Easter Sunday, and she's taking a picture of me in my little new outfit, and I'm standing at the position of parade rest. That's how she, you stood here, you did what she told you to do, and she expected you to follow her instructions. There was no negotiation. There was no, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't. She get up, boy, move, and I got up and moved. And that was the way it operated. And that was a part of her as a human being. But at the same time, she honed those skills while she was serving in World War II.
Okay. So let's segue, Dennis, and talk about you and your family. You have been a Marine, a consultant, an entrepreneur. So tell me about your career and your educational background.
I graduated from Lincoln University, the original historically black college or university, I might add, in 2015. After my service, I tried to go to college as a younger man, but it didn't stick. But I came home and I went to school, got an undergraduate degree in psychology from Lincoln, and started to work for the government. I worked for the state for a little while. I worked for a congressional office as their Wounded Warrior Fellow and did all of their military and veteran casework. And in that work, I found that while veterans and civilians both speak English, we speak a little bit of a different dialect. When I say the word mission, it might sound differently to a Marine veteran than it may sound to a civilian. So I started a consultancy to try to translate those miscommunications to help herd civilians who would like to get into the military community and work with us, sell us their stuff, and then to help veterans who are trying to transition their way back to the civilian lifestyle. And I've been doing that since 2017. In doing that, I got very interested in entrepreneurship. So I founded a chamber of commerce here in Philadelphia and the four surrounding counties to help veterans with their, in the economic space to build their businesses, to connect with one another, and to, try to move their financial and economic lives forward.
So, in case someone's interested in finding out more about the Chamber of Commerce or supporting it, what's your web address?
www.vetchamberphl.com. That is a veteran chamber, is a chamber, and PHL is in Philadelphia.com.
Okay, well, good. Well, thank you for that. So, was Sylvia your maternal or paternal grandmother?
She is my maternal grandmother,
Okay. So,
mother's
tell me.
mother.
Okay, so tell me about your parents and your siblings.
My mother was, or excuse me, is a native South Philadelphian. We grew up down South Philly. She raised me there. She also took the lessons that her mother taught her and taught them to me. She was very concerned with my education, very concerned with me being mannerly and respectful and polite. She talked to me a lot about her job being to make sure that I never had to depend on her again, to be a responsible and independent adult. And she raised me like that from the moment that I met her. My siblings, I have my older brothers, were they talked to me about being prepared for the world that I would encounter. So they made sure that if I failed in society, it wouldn't be the first time I failed. If I got into a fight, the first punch I got wouldn't be the first punch I ever got. So I'm sure that they got their kicks from beating on little Dennis, but at the same time, go ahead.
So you're the youngest of five, is that right? Five boys?
Youngest of five boys. So they were really, they protected me. I was, their little brother, but they also prepared me for the world that I would encounter. And everyone in my life, in my family, was focused on making sure that when all of us stepped out into the world, we were prepared for that world we would step into.
Sometimes it's a thin line, though, isn't
I mean, once I got to be a little bit bigger and they couldn't push me around and throw me down the steps anymore, it got a little different. But, I was really struck by how successful all of us were because of that preparation. We were sharpening our skills in the household on one another so that when we did step out into the world, we were prepared to deal with whatever it is that came at us.
So that tough love at home prepared you for a world where it's just tough.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So you have a very interesting family with eight members who have served in the service. That's very impressive. Tell me about the service.
My grandmother turned it into the family business. She made it clear to all of her sons and grandsons that while living in South Philadelphia was a wonderful thing, seeing the world would also be beneficial to them moving forward in their lives. So she did not push any of us towards service, but she did make it clear that the opportunity was there for us and that if we were there, we were willing to take it, that she would help us move through the process. So my uncles joined the Army, Navy, and Coast Guard. We don't let the Coast Guard members sit at the big table at at Thanksgiving. You just sit at the kids' table. My brothers were all Army, and I am the only Marine. So I sit at the head of the table at Thanksgiving.
Semper Fi. So you seem to have a very special, have had a very special relationship with your grandmother Sylvia. I'd love to hear more about that. I understand she took no crap.
No, ma'am, not at all. And one of the things that I value from her that above all others is she taught me to be authentic. She taught me that in order for me to be at peace with myself, I had to present myself to the world and everything else, and especially me, in a way that I would be at peace with. And she made it clear that not everybody would like that. Not everyone would agree with the way that I presented myself to the world. But as long as I was able to sleep well at night, knowing that I gave the, environment what it was that I actually had to give, then that was good enough. And she made that very, she, that was a underlying theme throughout the history of my life with her. She would tell me, humility is wonderful, but to a point. If you're lying to me, then you're just lying to me. If you're telling me you can't, and oh, I don't know, and maybe I shouldn't, if that's not how you actually feel, boy, then that's not what you say to me. You tell me the truth. You look me in my eye, you stand up straight, and you tell me what's actually going on. And she was adamant about that throughout the all of the time I knew her, was to be straightforward, say what you mean, be who you are, and don't adjust it for the place that you're in. And I, to this day, follow her lead.
Let's talk a little bit about influence and legacy. Beyond military service, I'm wondering how her experiences in the 6888 influence and shape your life and decisions and those of her children.
Yes, ma'am. I can speak for myself. I know that her service in the 6888 spurred me on to some of the major successes in my life. I attended the George W. Bush Institute Veteran Leadership Program. And while there, I spoke to them about my advocacy for the 6888 to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. And we had a personal leadership project that we did at the Institute, and mine was completely about the 6888 and the quest for getting the award of the medal to the unit. And I met the seventh secretary of the VA there. He and I worked together to try to get as much awareness about the 6888 as possible. And while there were many other advocates that worked at it before I did, there were a number of people who did great work on trying to get the medal awarded. I do believe that the work that I did there at the Institute and in my, I use my Chamber of Commerce to push forward the advocacy. I do believe that that work pushed us over the finish line. So I'm very proud of the connection that I have to her and her service and the work that I've done to try to help make sure that that service gets the recognition that it deserves.
You mentioned that, so we talked about that Sylvia being a entrepreneur. Was she involved civically as well?
She was civically involved locally. She was a block captain. She did a whole lot of mentorship in the neighborhood of young men and women that wanted to do something like she had done, whether it was to join the service, whether it was to start their own business, whether it was to start a family, all of those things. She was very involved locally and in the community with trying to help the folks that she was involved with to thrive and grow. So she was not someone who would go to Washington and march, but she was someone who would go onto her step and field questions and help folks in the neighborhood that needed it.
That's absolutely so, that's so important. So
Yes, ma'am.
important. Having that direct contact in your community.
And
One
I do.
life at a time, affecting one life at a time.
Ma'am, I do believe that her service informed that while she was built that way as a human, serving in the military and being around all of these women who were of that same mindset to do for each other and to make sure that the work in front of them got done, she also brought that home and built it into her personality and really made sure that we were all like-minded. I don't think that any of my family members have done anything but service positions. All of us have worked in the government to help, to, you know, being in the military, social work, all of those things. We all have that drive to do for the folks around us, and it was spurred on to us by Miss Sylvia.
Okay. How old was she when she passed?
She was 88 years old. I'm still struggling with her not being here, but
Was that pretty recent?
no, ma'am. She passed in 2010.
Is she interred in one of the veteran cemeteries?
She is not. She is in a cemetery that her son was buried in. She's buried right next to him in the outskirts of Philadelphia. And I go to visit her grave pretty regularly. Take a chair out there and sit down and just talk to her and drink some coffee and reminisce about the old days.
Angel in the outfield.
Man.
Yeah. So please share any reflections on what her life and legacy mean to you and your family.
As I stated earlier, she was a titan among mere mortals. She, again, was small and, you know, friendly. But when she entered a room, you could feel her presence. And she carried herself with such grace and joy. And she really made sure that we felt that and that we carried that spirit along with us as well. She wasn't concerned with what you could do for her, who you knew, any of those things. She was concerned with your character, with your honesty. She was really concerned about making sure that we were people who, when other folks talk to her about us, you know, don't have people giving me bad reports about you, boy. And, you know, that was something that she was serious about. She was very, she focused on her work in a way that I took to the way that I work. She was paid close attention to detail. She took care of people when they needed it. She made sure her place was clean and neat and well-kept. She was very fastidious about how she did her work and the product that came from it. And that's something that I've also taken from her as I move through life. So, you know, all of those things, again, were how she was built and how she was raised. But she crystallized it. She turned it into a path that so many of us have followed and will continue to.
So it was a significant honor for Sylvia to receive the Congressional Gold Medal, and certainly a culmination of a lot of hard work on your part. What was the reaction when she received it, or when you found out, and how did your family react?
My family was overjoyed. They understood that I was putting the work in to try to get it done, and there was all of the advocacy that was happening, but they didn't really have a expectation that it would actually happen. There were a number of things inside of our lives, just as, you know, people, we Black folks in society, that, you know, ended up in disappointment. So they really didn't have any feeling that this was going to happen. But when it did, they were just, you know, overjoyed, all on social media, folks calling me regular, asking me what they can do to help now, and, you know, all of that. They really were glad that Miss Sylvia and her battalion mates got the recognition that they so richly deserved when they came home in 1945 here in 2020-21.
So I just have a few more questions as we wrap up tonight. And I think I know the answer to these questions based on your own service, but what do you think of Sylvia's decision to serve her country, given the level of racism that existed in America at that time?
I think that she did not care. I think that she was far more concerned with making sure that she did her part for her country, for her family, for her battalion mates. And one of the things that, as you know, there was a documentary made about the 6888, and the young ladies talked about their service, and some of the other people who were interviewed talked about the racism that they've encountered in Birmingham and whatnot and so forth. And I remember talking to someone and them saying, well, if you want to see real racism, go to Birmingham, Alabama, not Birmingham, England, right? So it is a miracle that these women woke up, Black women in uniform in 1945 in the combat zone. Just every day waking up and being those people is fantastic. But that really wasn't what their mindset was. They were there to do a job, and that's how she approached her service. She was here to work, and all of those other things were distractions that she would not allow herself to be distracted by.
Finally, what lessons from her life story can you share to inspire young African-Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves?
I think the most direct message that I can share with them is that when opportunity avails itself to you, to take advantage of that opportunity, whether you are fearful of it or not, whether you think that it may fail, whatever your reservations are about it, embrace and follow that opportunity when it avails itself to you, because it may not come again. You may not have the opportunity to turn this down and accept that and go here but not go there. If there's an opportunity that avails itself to you, then do your best to take advantage of it as best you can, because you never know what may happen moving forward. My grandmother did not know that she was going to lay a foundation for her grandson the way that she did, but she did know that that opportunity was available to her. So she took advantage of it, and it has been providing a foundation for us since the 1940s. And we'll continue to do so into the future. So if I have any one thing to say that she taught me to do, was to take advantage of opportunity when it came, and to make sure that you got the best out of it when you gave your best to it so you could get the best out of it.
Well, Dennis, thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing your family story. I am truly grateful.
Thank you so much. I will sit and talk about my grandmother all day, every day, if you let me. So I am overjoyed to sit here now and have this conversation with you.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like for us to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. This is the season of the year when so many people struggle with depression and related issues. So tonight, I will share two quotes that I hope will be relevant. The first reflection is by an anonymous source. Remember the time you thought you could never survive? Well, you did, and you can do it again. The second reflection is by former First Lady Michelle Obama. I want you to understand that every scar that you have is a reminder, not just that you got hurt, but that you survived. See you for our next show on Wednesday, February 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.